Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review, Vice President Kamala Harris kicks off her presidential campaign in Milwaukee. Coming up, can she close an enthusiasm gap and appeal to a key voter demographic? Plus, how Republicans are responding to the shakeup in the presidential race after President Joe Biden suspends his campaign. And starting next week, tens of thousands of high school students will be accepted into a UW campus without even applying under a new program. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for July 26th.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
I'm AJ Biotpour.
AJ, thanks so much for joining us this week to recap a very, very busy and momentous week in politics, not only state politics, but national politics, while JR is on vacation. So let's just first start with the big statement that Vice President Kamala Harris made right here in the battleground state. She chose Milwaukee, which, not technically Milwaukee, in West Allis, which is just a few minutes away.
It's Milwaukee County.
Milwaukee County, correct. She kicked off her first full day campaigning since, of course, the news that President Joe Biden suspended his campaign on Sunday. It also just came on the heels of her securing enough votes to become the likely presumptive Democratic nominee. Now, Harris spoke to a real electrified crowd in West Allis Central High School 2 days after Joe Biden suspended his campaign. And of course, he endorsed Harris. Now, this was the largest campaign event to date that the campaign told us there. There was about 3,000 people. And what Harris did is she made a statement trying to talk about her record, criticizing former President Donald Trump, but it was also the first time I heard her say, and rightfully so, I will do X, Y, and Z as your next president. First, let's just air a clip from her talking about the importance of Wisconsin and how she's trying to define herself in the race.
The path to the White House goes through Wisconsin. Yes, it does. And to win in Wisconsin, we are counting on you right here in Milwaukee. And you all helped us win in 2020. And in 2024, we will win again. We'll stop Donald Trump's extreme abortion bans because we trust women to make decisions about their own body and not have their government tell them what to do. And when Congress passes a law to restore reproductive freedoms, as President of the United States, I will sign it into law.
What really stood out to me being in that very packed, also hot, gymnasium with no AC, but a lot of people, over 3,000 people attended, is that it felt different. And what I mean by that, AJ, is all the past events, you know, you and I have both covered when President Joe Biden visits, when Vice President Kamala Harris visits, there's maybe a couple hundred people. Big comparison to Trump rallies where thousands of people are coming, a lot of people from out of town. This one was by far more energized, you know, just dozens of people so excited to see her and to be enthusiastic about this shift in the presidential race, no doubt. And we know that she often, as well as the president, comes to these areas because they know they need Milwaukee to win. Even in her speech, she mentioned, you guys helped us win in 2020. We're going to need you again to win in 2024. And it also broadens out the conversation, too, about the wow counties, right? She's not in Milwaukee, just a little bit outside. But what are you hearing from voters, too, this week, AJ, about whether or not they're on board, the suburban moms that she really needs to win over to help carry her in the state?
Yeah, I think when you mentioned the idea of the Democratic base being fired up, you can sense that from the energy in that gym at West Allis Central. But one thing that you wonder now is how does the dynamic shift with suburban women in those counties like Waukesha and Ozaukee counties, where the trends have already made those counties a little more purple. They're not as deep red as they used to be. Much has been made of that, of course. How does that change with Kamala Harris in the race? She made very clear in that speech in West Allis, she is going to hammer away on the fact that former President Trump was found liable in a sexual assault lawsuit, and she's going to position herself counter to that as a former prosecutor, former attorney general, kind of play up that law and order aspect, so to speak, that could play potentially in those suburban counties and eat away further at those Republican margins that they've long depended on in those counties like Waukesha, Ozaukee, perhaps not Washington, which has remained deeper red. But if she's able to siphon off another 10, 15,000 votes than President Biden would have in those counties, in those Winnebago and Outagamie counties as well, that could potentially, as you know, in a race that, you know, the last couple presidential elections was decided by 20,000 votes, those suburban margins are going to be something that you should especially watch closely when we get to November.
And it's going to be fascinating to talk to voters through the next 4 months or so here until we get to November about whether the abortion issue will work better for Harris than it did Joe Biden, right? I mean, most women don't want to hear a man talk about that issue point blank. And she had this reproductive tour going on well before she became the presumptive and likely Democratic nominee. So is that going to appeal to those suburban women who have turned off from Trump due to his, you know, harsh abortion stance, which has shifted? We do have to note that it was only the past 3 months that now he is on board with a lot of Republicans we've heard from here in the state that said, let's leave it up to the states. Let's go to a referendum, things like that. So it's them playing this fine line, dancing a fine line on the issue to try to not go as far as they once was as their views, because the former president and now his new running mate, J.D. Vance, both previously supported a national abortion ban. And that is a message that we are probably going to continuously hear from Democrats hit them on.
Well, and beyond the abortion issue, which we know is going to be a big topic for certainly Democratic voters, in those Marquette polls, you see that for Democratic voters, abortion is a top issue to them. Even if it's not as big of an issue to those key suburban voters, how do they feel about a Trump-Vance ticket? That, again, is something that I'm curious about. We want to get out there and do more of those interviews because potentially, you know, when Senator Vance was picked as the running mate, the reasoning seemed to be, at least in some part, to set up an age contrast. Hey, this is the new generation. We have two older candidates running at the top of each ticket, but hey, there's the new generation in J.D. Vance. These comments about saying, essentially, childless people should not have as much of a stake in the country's future. How does that play with even suburban women who do have children? I just in the brief conversations I've had, there are people, even if you do have young children, they're turned off by that because perhaps they had a hard time conceiving children at first, or they know someone who has a hard time conceiving children, or they want to have kids, but they don't think they can afford it right now. I'm curious to see just how damaging those past comments from J.D. Vance end up being with that key demographic.
Right, and those were back from 2012, but whatever you say nowadays can go back and haunt you in politics. So, of course, with this big news, Republicans here in Wisconsin and nationally, like the former president, were very quick to try and label Kamala Harris and criticized her on her past record. Of course, now she's going to be the front face of inflation and the crisis at the U.S.-Mexico border. So in the days Republicans held a series of events, we also knew a former President Donald Trump and J.D. Vance got back on the campaign trail criticizing her. Let's just first hear from Congressman Brian Steil talking to those points of kind of what it's going to look like and sound like from Republicans now going forward.
The Democrats can change who the figurehead of the party is, but their policies remain the same. They continue to be the party of open borders, allowing drugs and fentanyl to come into Wisconsin, killing countless individuals. They remain to be the party of reckless spending, running inflation across this country. Everything's about 20% more expensive than it was when President Biden and Vice President Harris came into office. And if Vice President Harris becomes President Harris, we will see four more years of the policies of the Biden administration. Vice President Harris is coming to Milwaukee to rally her base. What she's not doing this week is working to actually secure the border or showing up when Netanyahu speaks before the joint session of Congress. Her decision to not show up when Netanyahu speaks to a joint session of Congress in her role as president of the Senate is wrong, and it sends the wrong message to our ally Israel.
So we heard there from Congressman Steil and other Republicans who were in that press conference hitting on inflation, hitting on the border policies, because, you know, she was tapped by, you know, President Biden to, hey, you got to deal with this. But I'm not 100% sure if she's been to the border, what significant policies that she's made, but that's going to be a tough issue for her.
Well, you know, we're seeing at the national level, some of the networks are doing these explainers saying, well, technically, Vice President Harris was never the, quote, border czar. And that may be true, but, I mean, at some point you believe your eyes and ears and you believe what was said in the past. And that was President Biden made her a point person of sorts. He delegated some not insignificant level of responsibility to handling the border. No retroactive whitewashing, so to speak, is going to change that. And what happened in that time is there was a significant issue. There were records broken for migrant encounters at the southern border. That's real. That happened. And that is going to be something that Vice President Harris has to answer to and the Democratic surrogates have to answer to. But what's also real is that the most recent data on border crossings from Customs and Border Protection is that in May and June of this year, the number of migrant encounters at the southern border were the fewest of any previous May or June under the Biden administration. So whatever changes, whatever dynamics have changed along the southern border, the level of migrant traffic is significantly less than what it was. Now, what's the plan going forward? That's going to be something that we want to hear from both candidates, because we know that the GOP platform that was adopted at the RNC in Milwaukee, which, if you can believe it, was only a week ago, that called for the largest migration operation in U.S. history. What does that look like? What's the Democratic counter to that? We know they're going to talk about the bipartisan bill that came up in the Senate, got stalled out because of Republican opposition. Mm-hmm. Are they going to move off of that? Do they think that, hey, let's run this back. We just need to get the votes to be in Washington. So the border is going to be something that comes up a lot. It should. It's significant. There are economic impacts to this for days, and especially in our dairy farms across Wisconsin. So that's something that should remain at the forefront.
Right. And we know in recent, I should say, polling consistently, economy, inflation, and border. Border's still number three. Abortion, a little bit farther down the list, but when you're polling just Democrats, of course, abortion rises to about the second or third issue. All right, let's move on to just about how black voters are feeling about Harris now at the top of the ticket. You and I both spoke to several of them, specifically in the Milwaukee area. You went to a beauty shop. I talked to those who attended the rally. And there was overall very mixed different reactions to her staging her first campaign event in Milwaukee. While some believe she could close that enthusiasm gap that we saw when President Biden was at the top of the ticket, others didn't think her ethnicity could sway them at all. So let's take a listen from them.
I think this is a great move. It's a great move for black women. It's a great move for the whole Democratic Party, because we have somebody that's very qualified and someone that probably scares Trump because he was not planning for her.
I was definitely voting for Joe Biden, but it made me go vote. It made me actually want to go vote sooner for Kamala, because it's, like I said, it's going to be our first woman president. It's never been done before in our history. So, and it's good. It's the right timing, too. Like, I feel like the United States is like slowly coming around from, like, you know, from back then to now. We have came a long way.
I would rather just watch and see, you know, how the narrative is being played out. I know to some extent it may have some type of effect on me, but I also feel like this isn't something that I wouldn't want to vote for either one.
So Harris was born in Oakland, California, to Jamaican and Indian immigrants. She also just received the endorsement from Barack and Michelle Obama. We know that can carry a lot of weight in political campaigns. But is it going to take her over the top? I think that's just something we still have to wait to see if black voters can help her.
Absolutely. And I think that you got an interesting cross-section this week in the interviews we did, being able to pop into a couple of beauty shops. I love doing stuff like that. You just go and you talk to people. It's not set up. It's important to talk to the people who show up at the rallies, but they're at the rally, so you have an idea
of
what they think and how much they care. One person I didn't put on TV because I didn't have anything to say was someone in this beauty shop who literally said, "I don't know who Kamala Harris is." I said, "It's the Vice President of the United States." "Well, I don't follow presidential stuff." So sometimes it's humbling to take a step back and realize there are a lot of people out there who just are not remotely closely following this stuff yet. As for those who are, you got that cross-section of it. You have some people, everyday folks in the black community in Milwaukee, who are very excited about Kamala Harris being potentially the first female president, the first female of color to serve as president of the U.S. So that would be very exciting for some folks. For others, I was so fascinated by that one salon owner at Locks and Love who said, the first two times I voted, it was for Barack Obama in 08 and 2012. But then I voted for Donald Trump in 16 as a business owner because I felt like that would really give me a boost. Not enough happened for her, apparently, because she sat out the 2020 election and she plans on sitting out the 2024 election because she ended up being disillusioned by both the Obama and Trump presidencies, not really providing what she thought they would. How many other voters like that are there? Because mm-hmm. when you look at Milwaukee specifically, in the city of Milwaukee, only twice since 2000 has a candidate been able to collect 200,000 votes in the city. It was Barack Obama. He did it in 08 and then again 4 years later. No one has been able to do it since, although President Biden came close. He got 198,000 votes. How much of that was the Obama effect? Having been his vice president, would that same effect rub off on Kamala Harris? That's going to be something that's interesting to watch because, again, you know that the Democrats are going to win Milwaukee and Milwaukee County, but what are those margins? If it's 79% versus 77% with big turnout versus meh turnout, again, we're talking about 10,000 votes potentially in a state that's going to be decided very, very likely based on the last two elections by about 20,000 votes.
What I also find interesting, too, is that a lot of, now they haven't been major polls, but there has been some polling since the announcement. There's more people going into the undecided section now, about 5-7% of those that have polled here in Wisconsin. So even despite this, you know, we always heard that people didn't want the same matchup. They didn't want the repeat. Well, it's not the repeat anymore. And now some people are still, scratching their heads. And you always have to go back to the point of how many people, regardless of the candidates, are just going to vote with their wallet. The economy's not good for me. I want to change. Maybe I'll close my eyes and vote for former President Donald Trump. I think that's always going to be fascinating to watch because some people don't even like to admit who they're going to be voting for. I mean, that is a private choice. You don't have to tell people that option because of how polarized our politics are. But I think they'll be fascinating to watch. And, of course, the new Marquette Law School poll was out in the field this week. We should be having those results very soon. And that's really, I think, going to be a huge factor to see where most voters here in Wisconsin are feeling.
Well, based on the polls that have come out so far, it's been a bump for the Democrats President Biden dropped out. That'll be interesting to see. I'm curious to see, within the Marquette poll, how are the respondents going to handle the who do you trust more on the economy question? Because in some of these other polls, the recent trend had been people feeling a little bit better about President Biden's handling of the economy. Does that reflect in Wisconsin? Does that continue now that it's Harris at the top of the Democratic ticket? Do people assign that same level of blame for inflation? Does that stick to Vice President Harris the way it was with President Biden with Wisconsin voters? I think just very specifically, once you get past that top line, because spoiler alert, it's going to be close. It's going to be very close. I'm going to go out on a limb and say whatever it is, it will be within the margin of error, whatever that difference is between Trump and Harris. That just seems to be what it always is with the Marquette poll in Wisconsin. But within that, on that question of who do you trust more on the economy and who do you trust more on the border, Mr. Trump had a huge edge in both of those. Does that remain the case this time around?
Something we'll all be watching for. All right, moving on to just where are Wisconsin delegates at, right? I mean, right after the news on Sunday, that was something that I was quickly making calls about, or how are people feeling? Is the party united around Harris? It was only, less than 24 hours that people really had time to digest the news. Okay, are we really going to do this? Some people weren't quite there. We got a statement from Governor Tony Evers on Sunday, but he didn't mention Harris at all. He thanked Joe Biden for his service. Then came Monday morning. Governor Evers was on board. Senator Tammy Baldwin, of course, endorsed on Sunday, too. But that's where we're at. So the chairman, Ben Wickler, of the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, said as of Monday, there were about 89 of the 95 delegates had declared their support for Harris as of Monday. And why is this important, AJ? Well, they have the big deciding votes at the Democratic National Convention next month when they convene in Chicago, starting the week of August August 18th. So Wickler basically said they'll get there. I've checked in a few times this week. You know, where are you at? They believe those six people kind of still making up their minds. Most of it, they said, they just haven't been able to get them on the phone. I mean, it's still midst of summer. It's great weather outside. Some people are traveling, et cetera. But I think they will come to their senses in a sense. But I'm not seeing too many other states that are not following that trend either.
And even if they don't, right, if it ends up just being six holdouts out of 95 and you have a similar proportion in all these other states, that's still going to be more than enough delegates by a very comfortable margin for Vice President Harris to secure the Democratic nomination. So seeing the delegates quickly fall in line, as Ann Jacobs, the WEC chair and one of those Milwaukee Democratic delegates told me this week when we sat down with her, it's just a matter of what's realistic. Realistically, if you have an open convention at the United Center next month, it's just going to be chaos, was the word she used.
Right.
You don't want chaos. You want to start falling back behind a candidate now. You can be campaigning between now and August, and then when you get to the DNC, you're just ramping up that messaging even more versus having a month of, who should it be? I like this person. I like that person. Mm-hmm. And then you have an all-out, you know, series of votes, you know, in Chicago. That's just not something that, you know, just speaking to Ann Jacobs and others, that is just so not palatable for party leaders. Of course, how do your run-of-the-mill Democrats feel? That'll be the question. You know, Republicans are really hitting at this point of, well, look, Vice President Harris did not get a primary vote. There should be outrage. Are run-of-the-mill Democratic voters, Democrat-leaning voters, outraged? There doesn't seem to be much of a sense mm-hmm. of that, but that's something that we'll see, you know, if that materializes in any way in Chicago next month.
Right, and I also talked to Representative Christine Sinicki, who is also a delegate, on Monday, right after this news happened, and she said, listen, yes, there were some people that asked questions about an open convention. Sure, there were some people who weren't there 100% yet. Yes, that has built momentum. But she also said what I thought was interesting, and she goes, you were there, Emily, at the Republican National Convention. You see how unified they were? We need to be that. We need to be there come August. We need to be there actually as of yesterday, but I'll give it some time. You know, she was joking. But they need to get together. And that's why I think also we have seen, you know, the Joe Manchins quickly, I think it was even on Monday morning, was said, no, I'm actually not running, even though he was, of course, one of the first right. people that people were talking about on Sunday evening on, you know, political talk shows, is he going to get into the race? Are we going to have a contested convention? Luckily, that simmered down pretty quickly this entire week, and it looks like she's going to be the presumptive nominee.
This is also a classic case of money talks. Yeah. And when you're raising more than $100 million in the first 2 days, anyone who may have had questions either have those questions answered or decide they're just going to keep those questions to themselves, because that level of fundraising within a 48-hour window, it really does speak for itself.
Yeah, I think it got up to closer to 160 over 3 days. And how do you compete with that, right? I mean, you got to have money in a presidential race for sure. Moving on to kind of our next topic about this presidential race, because there's a lot to get to. AJ, as you kind of really explored the big question, as allies of former President Donald Trump have floated the possibility of legal challenges to try and keep President Joe Biden on the Democratic ticket. But election experts and those who you talked to this week believe it's unlikely court fights seeking to block Vice President Kamala Harris from the presidential ballot will gain traction here in the state or in federal courts. I spoke to Brian Schimming about this, the chairman of the Republican Party. Are you guys exploring this? Kind of said, not right now, but there are conversations. You said you spoke to Ann Jacobs on this, and she's also been asked quite a bit. So let's hear from both of them on this issue.
There'll be a review of the various legal issues that come with switching out, you know, their candidate on top of the ticket, just as if we did the same thing, the Democrats would be doing it to us. So we'll review the legal issues at hand. If we feel there's a reason to go forward, we will. But right now we're operating on the assumption it'll be Kamala Harris.
I have to tell you, I have no idea what legal basis there would be to challenge Vice President Harris becoming the presidential candidate. I've thought about it. I've looked at it. I haven't certainly seen anyone write about it. To the extent it would be a state decision, I have no idea under what legal theory it would be. If it were some sort of federal lawsuit, I also don't know what that would look like. I know there's been a lot of, you know, chest beating that lawsuits will be filed, but it feels like a lot of puffery right now.
So I think we're going to still hear this rhetoric, especially from the former president, because I think many Republicans know, I think their chances were better at winning in November with Joe Biden on the ticket after a very poor debate performance. There was many signs before that, but that was really, you know, the dagger, in a sense, of what a lot of Americans saw, unfortunately.
Well, Congressman Glenn Grothman said as much, because whereas other Republicans know that it's probably not the best idea to go on TV and say, hey, you know, our chances were better running against President Biden, they're just not saying that. Congressman Grothman did. He, mm-hmm. of course, made a comment about Democrats lining up to support Vice President Harris because of her ethnic background, which got picked up nationally and got all kinds of attention. But be that as it may, this question of ballot challenge for Vice President Harris, it doesn't seem like there's a pathway, as you heard from Ann Jacobs there. And really, you know, you don't have to necessarily ask someone. You just look up state law for yourself.
Right.
It's laid out pretty clearly. The political parties have until the first Tuesday of September by 5 p.m. September 3rd, 5 p.m., that's the deadline. Even if you had an open convention in Chicago, you'd come out of there with a ticket. It would be submitted as we've seen, you literally have to get it in by 5 o'clock. Remember 4 years ago, you have to get it in by 5 o'clock
right.
to get on the ballot in this state. As long as it happens, either any party would be fine. Mm-hmm. In that case, you just have to make the deadline. The reason why the Democrats don't want to have an open convention, it's not a matter of getting on the ballot in Wisconsin. It's a matter of, do you want to have a month of campaigning on a unified message, or do you want to have a month of fighting amongst yourselves, then sorting it out at your convention? That's just not palatable for a lot of Democrats.
Right.
But the ballot access challenge, just a simple reading of the state law makes it pretty clear that there really isn't a challenge in Wisconsin. The one where things could have gotten frisky potentially was Ohio. I mean, the Secretary of State had said pretty clearly, we are giving until September 1st. There were questions about another reading of August 7th, which of course would be before the DNC. So the Democrats in Ohio were saying, well, look, I know that the Secretary of State is saying we are going to give until September 1st, but because August 7th was a date somewhere else, we don't want to leave it hanging in the balance. So it seemed like this whole ballot challenge really hinged on one state, Ohio, and even that seems to not even really be much of an issue at this point.
Right, but worth explaining, right, because there
course,
was a lot
yes.
of talk about it. All right, let's move on to our last tip. I've got a few minutes here, which was interesting this week, moving on to Washington, D.C., and with the members of Wisconsin's Democratic delegation, we're actually split on attending a speech by Israel's Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu. He spoke before Congress. It was a very defining speech. He also called protesters losers. Didn't really sit well with a lot of Democrats. I believe there was up to about 50-plus Democratic lawmakers that did not attend, and two were from Wisconsin. That was U.S. Representative Gwen Moore and Rep. Mark Pocan, who has been the biggest outspoken critic against the war in Gaza. Meanwhile, what was interesting and why we want to talk about this is that U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin did decide to attend because she has really actually struggled with these protesters who, you know, want a ceasefire. They want a solution. She says she went there hoping to hear answers from Netanyahu. Well, she didn't get those.
Yeah, she said very much that in her statement. Basically, I want to hear a clear plan from the Prime Minister. How are you going to end this war? How are you going to get us toward a two-state solution? And in her view, it didn't happen. And what's going to be interesting is, going back to the presidential race to tie this thing up, is you had this chaos out there where these protesters came mm-hmm. from all over. They're not only defacing monuments, but they're spraying things like Hamas is coming. That's not something that sits well with the vast majority of American voters. Vice President Harris put out a pretty strong statement condemning them. But now, if you go down these, you know, if you spend some time in these online circles on X, Reddit, all these places, the far left is very upset that, and even not the far, far left, just kind of far to the left, is upset that Vice President Harris took such a strong tone in condemning these protesters. Realistically, the middle-of-the-road voter is not happy with the sight of an American flag getting burned in a U.S. national park. So it just speaks to this tightrope that Democratic candidates like Kamala Harris, like Tammy Baldwin, are going to have to
address.
They're going to have to strike that balance between not completely turning off a part of the Democratic base, but making sure that they're also not alienating moderate voters whose votes can still be had.
Right. It's going to be fascinating to watch. All right. Well, that will do it for this week in politics. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm AJ Bayatpour.
We'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.